Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Coram Deo Church and special guest Pastor Justin Curtis, also of Coram Deo Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about A Theology of Work, Part 1.
Justin, welcome to the Wednesday Conversation.
Thanks so much for having me. Longtime listener.
First time caller. Hey, got a few shout-outs today. So first of all, Dusty and Chris Hemelman are both not with us today. Chris, I believe, is on a day of solitude, is what his message to me said. So he's applying one of our recent podcasts on rest, which is good for him.
Good job, Chris.
And Dusty's on vacation. We have Mike Kresnick with us in the studio, and Mike has a unique and special task on today's podcast, because what we also have for today's podcast is a listener. Shout out to Tyson, Wednesday Conversation listener, sent us this amazing gift box of, I don't know, it's like gourmet popcorn. There's like 20 different flavor.
There's like 10
nine.
Flavors.
I exaggerate. There's nine flavors of popcorn. There's 10 flavors of popcorn. Bethany has already grabbed one whole bag for herself.
I claimed it as mine.
So Mike's job during this podcast is going to be to eat these various popcorns and then sort of comment to you, the listener, about which ones he finds most interesting, flavorful. Where is this popcorn from, Mike?
A place called Just Pops.
Just Pops.
Popped.
Just Popped.
Just
Popcorn.
Popped.com or something like that. Yes. Hey, so Tyson, thanks for honoring your Wednesday Conversation podcast team with a nice little gift here. And by the end of this podcast, Mike will have a ranking for you of these 10 flavors and just which one is best. And you may hear Justin and I eating a little bit of popcorn here and there throughout the podcast.
You might also hear Mike eating the popcorn.
We've instructed Mike that really his goal today is to help the listeners discern which of these popcorn is best. And there's already one that we've just decided is terrible. Is that right? With this far into the podcast, you've already decided that one is just objectively terrible.
Yeah, it's a flavor called A Lot Like Love.
Wow.
It's a chocolate cherry combination.
That's the one that's the worst.
It's terrible.
It says something that's the one that you dismissed outright.
It tastes like NyQuil.
Hey, it tastes like cough syrup.
If it tastes like NyQuil, yeah, that's just no good. No good. So, hey, second shout out to Dan and Lynn Bolin at New Day Dairy in Clarksville, Iowa. Got to visit Dan and Lynn recently. My son did a week-long apprenticeship at their dairy farm, and they are avid Daily Liturgy podcast and Wednesday Conversation listeners. They have these huge speakers in their dairy barn, and so as Dan makes the rounds every morning and checks on his cows, the podcast is blaring out throughout the barn, and Dan's one of those guys who's really trying to integrate what we're going to talk about today. What does it mean to have a distinctly Christian approach to your work? Dan is a dairy farmer. He's not a pastor. He's not a guy in full-time ministry, although he does have a ministry background. But he's trying to think through and live out what does it mean to work with Christian distinctiveness and work to the glory of God as a dairy farmer. And so, Dan and Lynn, thanks for listening. Glad to have you guys as part of the team. And Justin and I today, we have Justin on the podcast. Justin, because you have sort of spearheaded the Omaha Faith and Work Collaborative, which is one attempt to sort of push forward the conversation about faith and work. What is, Justin, the Omaha Faith and Work Collaborative? Give us a little infomercial for the Omaha. If Omaha Faith and Work Collaborative was sponsoring this podcast, what would you say right now that would be like your little blurb?
The little tagline, per se?
Yeah.
The Omaha Faith and Work Collaborative is it's a network right now of Christians in our city, throughout our city, who have committed to getting together a few times out of the year to enter into the conversation about the integration of faith and work from the perspective that the gospel should and does change everything. And that includes our work. So it's really aimed and targeted to help to equip Christians to have a comprehensive worldview where we're seeing how the gospel should and does apply to every aspect of our life. But it also gives people, it's intended to equip Christians to have a vision for what does it look like for me to honor God, to glorify God in my Monday through Friday, in the 40, 50, 60 hours a week where I'm engaged in my vocation.
if you have never heard of that before and you're in the city of Omaha and you'd like to sort of know about the Omaha Faith and Work Collaborative, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com and we'll kick that over to Justin and he can get you information. Justin, one of your little taglines for the Omaha Faith and Work Collaborative is that we're trying to help Christians display fuller Christian distinctiveness, excellence, and accountability in their various professions. Why those three things?
That's a great question. I think, first off, Christian distinctiveness. There's a pursuit or there's a desire that we have that Christians, when they're engaging in work, would, in some ways, look very much like their neighbors who don't know the Lord. In that they're trying to engage in meaningful work, and yet they're still doing so in a distinctive sort of way. Their aim is to glorify God, to work for work in such a way that honors God and not man, that is even motivated from different ends. So I think a way of talking about Christian distinctiveness is to say we want to see Christians engage in work where their end goal is not money, is not building a huge platform for themselves, is not just trying to set up well for retirement, but wanting to glorify God in meaningful work that furthers the work that God's doing in their local culture, in their city. We also believe that Christians should work with excellence, Christianity should not reduce or lower the standard of work, that we don't give ourselves grace in such a way that we are satisfied with subpar work, but that as Christians, part of glorifying God in all that we do, there's a deep desire to be excellent in the things that we're doing vocationally and want to continue to grow and get better and be the best version of who we are in whatever workplace that we're in. And then the final one that you mentioned was accountability. A lot of the pursuit of Christian distinctiveness and excellence is going to come through just good accountability amongst Christians in various professions.
Fellow Christians in your profession who care about that. And,
absolutely.
Holding you to that.
Absolutely.
Mike, what are you feeling so far over there?
Well, Justin's talking about excellence here. I'm eating the E.T. popcorn. It's apple popcorn with peanut butter and Reese's Pieces. It's pretty excellent.
Is it really?
Yeah, when you get all the flavors together, it's not excellent if you just eat the apple popcorn alone.
Yeah, it sounds
good. But if you have the peanut butter drizzle and the Reese's Pieces, it's pretty good.
I'm about to eat this pretzel that was in this bag of popcorn. It apparently is supposed to be eaten with some other popcorn.
That's the borrower's mix, white and cheese popcorn with pretzels and M&Ms.
See, why do you have to mess it up with pretzels and M&Ms? I just like white cheese popcorn. I'd be happy with just that.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to do two podcasts on faith and work, and we want to go in two phases here. The first thing I want to do is just sort of set up a theology of work. What is a theology of work? So we're going to think through the lens of creation, fall, and redemption when it comes to our work. And then in the second podcast, we're going to have Justin tease out for us some of the core sort of principles that drive particularly the Omaha Faith and Work Collaborative, but more broadly that drive any approach to sort of Christian distinctiveness in work. So what are some principles that we can grab hold of in our work that help us to begin to think about what does it mean to do our work in a uniquely Christian way, in a uniquely God-glorifying way? So that's where we're headed. Let's start with asking the question, what is a theology of work? And here's where I was first provoked by this. I had a friend who, I used to work in a parachurch ministry, and a lot of people would leave normal professions and go into ministry, and they would describe it like this. You know, when I was working a normal job, I had to spend 40 or 50 hours a week doing what my employer wants, but now I'm free to devote all of my time to God. And I understand the sentiment that they were trying to express there, but something struck me as odd about that, because basically what they're saying is this ministry work is more spiritual and more godly and more God-infused than this other secular job that I had. And that's a really dualistic way of thinking about life. And so I began to sort of wrestle with that and ask questions about that. And what I began to see is this, that I think one of the weaknesses of how Christians tend to think about work is that the gospel hasn't transformed our view of work itself. It's only transformed how we think about the outcome of our work. So here's how here's the story that I tell that sort of makes sense of that. When I was selling cars, which was my first job after college, well, that's not true. My first job after college was working in politics. And then after that, but while I was waiting for my wife to graduate, we were engaged and we were going to get married. I got this short-term job selling cars at Travis Chrysler Plymouth in Norman, Oklahoma. No longer does that dealership exist. It's been sold like six times since then, but I was selling minivans. You know, I was this 22-year-old kid trying to sell minivans to soccer moms and convince them that they should get the four-door minivan instead of the three-door or whatever.
I can just imagine you in the minivan part of that.
You own a Chrysler minivan, so you know.
Absolutely.
That's my background. That's my history. And I had this guy. There was this guy, Mike. Mike was the heavy line mechanic who worked back in the service department. And the thing about Mike, he was one of the greatest guys I knew. He was a total hardcore pagan, like not interested in Jesus, not interested in religion, not interested in church, not interested in anything except sort of his own personal fulfillment and satisfaction. But he was also one of those guys that was just really a warm and generous guy. And the deal with Mike was after the dealership closed or after the service department closed, so the service department closed at 5, the sales floor closed at like 9. After the service department closed at 5, he would do whatever work you wanted on your personal vehicle, and he would charge you in how many cases of beer it would cost you to have that work done. So, like, I had a Honda Accord at that time, and I needed a CV joint changed, and I went back and said, "Hey, Mike, would you be willing to work on my CV joint?" He's like, "That's a 2-case job,
easily.
Like, 2 cases of beer, done, plus parts." So I brought Mike 2 cases of beer. Sure enough, he fixed my car. So for Mike, his vision of work was work is about beer money. Like work is about providing what I actually want, which is a few cases of beer to go home and drink after work. And Christians sometimes can think of our work in that same way, that work is a means to an end, that it's what I'm after is not beer money. Maybe it's tithe money, or maybe it's providing for my family. There's nobler ends that we're after, but we still see work as sort of a means to provide those ends. And what that reveals is that the gospel still hasn't transformed how we think about our work itself. It's good that we have better ends, that we're not after beer money, but we're after, furthering the kingdom of God through financial generosity. But that's different than a renewed and transformed view of work itself. And so as I began to do the Bible work on sort of a theology of work, one of the important things I began to see is that in the book of Genesis, God gives work, meaningful work, to Adam and Eve before the fall. In other words, work is a pre-fall reality. If your impression of work is, well, work is, you know, one of those things we kind of have to do because we live in the world. No, work is something we get to do because we're made in the image of God. And that actually really changes how you think about work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the way in which you highlighted, I think there's a struggle amongst Christians, if I'm to be honest, as I've had conversations with Christians, there's this struggle early on to overcome the sacred secular divide, which is what you just hinted at. The idea that there is some work that is God honoring that is sacred, and then there's just the other work that's secular and lacks purpose, lacks meaning. And when you live in that false dichotomy of work, you tend to lack deeper meaning, deeper purpose to your work. Therefore, you settle for, I need to make money to provide my family. I need to have money put away in a 401k so I can retire. I want to do a good job so I don't get fired. I want to move up the ranks in my company. But those ends, and those aren't inherently bad things. Again, those are good things, but they're not the ultimate end of wanting to honor and glorify God in my work, which covers all work.
Mike, it honors and glorifies God that you're tasting all this popcorn right now. Would you like to give us a little update?
Yeah, there's a popcorn called Kyle's Creation.
Whoa.
It's caramel corn with white and milk chocolate, and it tastes about as good as the description. So,
is that one, like, if you had to rank them, where does that one fall?
It's middle of the road.
What's the Forerunner right now? What's the top?
The Forerunner is Tango and Cash. It's caramel corn, Fritos, cashews, and peanut butter.
That sounds kind of gross, but I'm going to take your word for it.
I've got a big clump of it, about the size of the palm of my hand. I'm going to put it in my mouth right now.
All right, Justin, going back to the work of me selling cars.
Yeah.
Help me gain a vision for how does me doing a good job as a salesperson glorify God? I think in some professions it's easy to see, oh, like if I'm in social work and I'm helping place children in families, okay, there's certain professions that have a real clear connection to something very redemptive, but it was hard for me to see when I was selling cars, how does selling 10 cars a month instead of 6 cars a month or meeting my sales goals and quotas and furthering this this organization, how does that glorify God?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think car sales is actually a pretty good example of how to do it. Because, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, there's a good chance you've been on a car lot. You've engaged with the car salesman.
And you have a stereotype.
And you have a stereotype, right? Like, you've experienced to some degree the shadiness of car salesmanship, which isn't true of every car salesman, right? But there is a stereotype out there. And a friend of mine reminded me even earlier today that stereotypes are out there because stereotypes are real. So to some degree, you've been on a car lot and you've had an experience where you feel like you're being taken advantage of. You feel like you're being manipulated. Well, let's just pause for a moment and ask the question, what would it look like if you actually walked onto a used car lot and felt like you were actually being cared for, you were actually being listened to, you did not feel like they were trying to push you into a car that you can't afford, you didn't feel like there was manipulation to try to get a little bit more money out of you or that you were trying to get played, but you were engaging with someone who was ethical, who seemed to have good integrity, who seemed to be speaking truth and really wanted to be helpful. And that car salesman, in doing those things, is loving his or her neighbor in a way that glorifies God. I think that's just a really clear example.
That's really good. So the first principle is that we're created to work. So to have a theology of work, we start with creation and we say work is good. God gave us work to do. God placed Adam and Eve in the garden and said, work it and take care of it. And one of my seminary professors used to say, this is what theologians call the cultural mandate. And he used to say that when God gave Adam and Eve the cultural mandate, he expected them to split the atom. In other words, all that we have seen in human history of sort of human beings taking dominion over the earth, figuring out new things, charting, coming up with new technologies and exploring and creating new possibilities, this is all an expression of the cultural mandate.
And a lot like making popcorn that tastes like Oreo cookies. It's part of the cultural mandate.
It is. Someone thought up, hey, we can combine popcorn with Oreo cookies and make something better than both.
Right.
And that's good and noble
Arguably.
Work. Good and noble work. All right, so creation. But then we have, the second movement of the story is fall. And so we have to acknowledge that work is cursed. Work is brought under, in Genesis 3, when Adam and Eve sin and when God pronounces his curse on creation and on Adam and Eve as a result of their sin, one of the things that he curses is their work. He says to Adam, Genesis 3, 17 through 19, cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you, and you will eat the plants of the field by the sweat of your face. You will eat bread till you return to the ground. So there's this reality of thorns, thistles, sweat. You get this sense that work is going to be hard. Work is going to be difficult. If we apply this to a modern context, we might say it this way. Work involves overtime and stress and quotas and belligerent bosses and difficult coworkers and customers who are hard to deal with. And all of these things are part of the nature of work as cursed. And so we work not just with a reality, with the understanding that God has created us for work, but that the work we do is affected by the fall.
Yeah, and yet God doesn't abandon work. You know, you see that work is then cursed, but you also see this hint in Genesis chapter 9, after the flood, when God is speaking to Noah and kind of gives him a sense of the cultural mandate again, where he blesses Noah and says, hey, go be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And you see that cultural mandate, that sense of go and create culture and create communities and create societies is work that even post-fall, God says, needs to happen. Needs to continue.
So we have to hold these two things together. If we only see the goodness of work and we don't have a realistic view of the fall, we'll tend to be frustrated when things don't go as they should. When we miss a sale or when something gets frustrating at work or when, computer crashes, it'll just frustrate us. On the other hand, if we only see the bad and we don't embrace creation and the good of work, we're going to have a hard time doing our work to the glory of God because work is just going to seem like it's sort of all negative, like it's just a necessary evil. So we have to hold these two things together. And then as we see, for instance, in Romans 8, we see that redemption, God's redemption of us in Christ, is not merely the salvation of our individual souls, but it's the redemption of all of creation, including our work. So Romans 8:20 says the creation was subjected to frustration in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God. So redemption has this sort of cosmic scope to it. It's this whole creation movement. And what that means is, it goes back to what you said a few minutes ago, Justin, that in our work as Christians, as those redeemed by Christ who are now agents of God's redemption in Christ, as we do our work, we're asking the question, what would it mean to do this work redemptively? What would it mean to be a little agent of redemption in this moment? So to go back to your car sales example, to be the kind of car salesman who has integrity and who this person has a positive experience and sees me as a helpful person, and whether or not I end up making a sale, I want to serve this person and love them, love my neighbor as myself. That's a little hint of what does redemption look like in that moment. And that's how I think we can just sort of think about all of our work. What does it mean for us to work redemptively, to just be agents of God's redeeming activity in our little sphere of influence?
And I think that's such a rich and deep and beautiful story to get caught up in. I think oftentimes when Christians think about faith and work integration, they'll often want to reduce it to, I need to share the gospel with coworkers. Or I need to find a way to lead a Bible study over the lunch hour, something to that end. And again, those are not bad things inherently. But what if we as Christians began asking deeper questions? What's it look like for me in my vocation to be an agent or an instrument of redemption? What are the particular ills of our society or of our city that I am particularly gifted to meet through my work, or the company that I work for is particularly able to engage in through work? I think asking questions like this gives our work meaning and purpose in a day where oftentimes when people have been working, and I remember this from one of the first jobs before I got into ministry where I was teaching. I taught in a high school, and there in that high school, there were a number of teachers who were really just kind of punching the clock. Like, they were just going in, they knew they had a job to do, but they wanted to leave. And that sense of mystery, that sense of imagination, that sense of wanting to make a difference wasn't necessarily there in the teachers who were tenured, but it was there in the teachers who were new, who were just getting started. And I think that resonates to a lot of different people who are starting in new vocations and new careers. There's this excitement, there's this enthusiasm, this energy to want to make a difference. And over time, if we're not asking questions like the ones that you laid out, I think we can easily drift, just like our neighbors down the street, into this cynicism about work or this flat understanding of work that loses mystery, that loses wonder, that isn't challenging me to leverage Christian imagination in my work to see ways in which my vocation can help to further God's kingdom advancing in some of the broken places of our city.
Mike, you got any popcorn thoughts right now?
If I was to have to take one of these popcorns on an island, and just I was able to take one of these
yes.
to this island, it would be the Castaway Coconut Cream Pie popcorn. It is so good. It is.
I see what you did there.
It is so good.
Hey, that is a good one. I actually
this one
that
right here.
One's my favorite.
That's delicious. That's the one the bag is the emptiest.
Yeah.
For that one, which means we've been eating it the most.
Yeah.
The other side of this, Justin, maybe if there's a negative side to this, what you just said would imply that there may be some ways in which a distinctly Christian approach to my vocation makes me say no to certain jobs or certain opportunities. So there are some areas of society where, as I operate out of Christian conviction, I might find myself more and more disaligned with those vocations. I'm thinking, to use the most obvious one, I'm thinking of an old sermon where Mark Driscoll said, we don't have Christian strip clubs. That's not a thing, apply that to, apply that to like the, there's a lot of, there are certain industries in a city where we would just say, you know what, that's actually bringing death rather than life, or it's bringing, it's working against redemption rather than for it. Have you had to walk with anybody through those kinds of hard decisions and discernment about vocation?
I remember a conversation, this would have been 3 or 4 years ago, but it was a young man who was coming to faith through the ministry of Coram Deo. The gospel was changing his worldview, changing his purpose, and he found himself wrestling with the fact that he was employed at one of the casinos on the other side of the river over in Council Bluffs, Iowa. And again, he wasn't necessarily dealing cards. I think he was actually working one of the buffets or something like that. But there was a lack of unity or a lack of compatibility in the mission and the purposes of God and the mission and the purposes of the organization that he was in. And he came to the place where he just realized, I don't think I can work here. I'm not particularly blessing the city and blessing and loving my neighbor through my work. Therefore, a change needed to be made.
I think those are some of the harder questions that have to get asked as we begin to think about a theology of work. I'm reflecting here on a post that I wrote for the Gospel Coalition about 6 or 7 years ago where I tried to frame out some of this theology stuff, and we'll post that in the show notes. But I ended that post with what I call a theology for Monday morning. Like, okay, great, creation, fall, redemption, that's a great grid to think through, but how does that change how you go to work tomorrow? And so I tried to give four simple practical things. Number one, just work hard. Whatever you do, do it with all your heart. That's that, Colossians 3, right? So I think Christians just need to make it our goal to be the best at what we do, to work, to be the most faithful employees in any. So all of us have different talents and different gifts and different aptitudes and different abilities, but we should be known as hard workers, as faithful workers, as those who really do our work well. Second, don't have unrealistic expectations. Like, you might get fired from a job. You might not meet your quota. Your company may get downsized. The fact that you know Jesus does not mean your life at work is always going to be peachy and rosy and everything's going to go well. It might involve significant setbacks, and that's okay. We should expect that because work is cursed. We live in a fallen world, and not everything works out with a happy ending. That doesn't mean that God is punishing you. It just means there's inevitable reality. You know, in a world where everything is subject to decay, there's going to be industries that are on the rise and industries that are plummeting. And if you're in one of those industries where people are downsizing and jobs are going away and things are getting pulled back, that's just the inevitable reality of life. So let's be realistic about the reality of the fall. Third, honor the fourth commandment, practice rest, as we talked about in a recent podcast. And then fourth, learn to pray the Lord's Prayer, which we walked through recently at Coram Deo, but especially that part of, you know, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Learning to pray that at your workplace. God, what does it mean as I go to work today for your kingdom to come, for your will to be done? How do I honor you in this moment at my work? So those are four really simple, practical things that I think can begin to animate our work tomorrow morning or whenever you're listening to this. There's one final linguistic point I want to make before we get ready to sort of land the plane, and that is this, that we think about the word vocation, which is another word for our work, and the root of that is the Latin verb voca, which means to call. What's interesting about that is to go back to your sacred-secular distinction that we talked about at the beginning, Justin, Christians have had this bad habit of referring to being called to the ministry or then just having a normal job. But the language of vocation reveals that at some time in our history, people thought of all work as a calling. That's what it means to have a vocation, is to say, I am called to a particular station or to a particular work in life. And so whether that calling is as a preacher of the gospel or as an electrician or as a school teacher or as a lawyer or whatever, embracing my work as calling, as a sense of this is what God has given me to do, begins to change how I think about work and begins to open me up much more fully to the purposes of God in my work. Any final thoughts, guys, as we prepare to sort of close out the podcast?
I think I just want to encourage particularly people who are young in their vocation or in their work, who hear the idea of, actually, I can be called to business. I can be called to finance. I can be called to a certain trade, to give yourself some time and some grace in that. You do see times in Scripture where God clearly enters in and there's a dramatic calling to a specific work, but that's not always the way that it happens. And if we're honest with ourselves, a lot of the ways in which we go about discerning our call or discerning our vocation is through trial and error. It's through trying a job, finding I'm not very good at it, but I like this element of it, and that's going to help me when I move into my next job. And even receiving feedback from people who know you well, who know the ways in which you're gifted. So let's not assume that a calling to a trade or to a vocation is a really clear, definitive moment that happens in your life, but something that may take some time, and there's nothing wrong with that.
That's
Also, don't assume that when you eat Oreo popcorn, it won't get stuck in your teeth like real Oreo cookies do.
Wow. Is that affecting the taste of the other popcorns?
Kind of. Oreo is starting to
permeate.
Yeah, just
my
flavor
children
everything
would
else.
Love that.
Yeah.
There's one popcorn over there that's like it's green like ectoplasm. What is
yeah, that's
it? It's
the
like Ghostbusters.
That's the Apple ET popcorn with the peanut butter and Reese's Pieces.
So that you think that one tastes good, even though I just think it looks like nothing but food coloring.
It looks gross, but when you have all three flavors combined, it's really good.
Arguably, using the word ectoplasm definitely dated you. Mm. And I would go as far as to say half our listeners have no idea.
I have no idea what that is.
Hey, that's okay.
Sorry, millennials.
That's my childhood. That's my childhood. All right, so we're going to come back to this in the next podcast and take the conversation forward about the theology of work. Thanks for listening. And I do hope that this begins to help you think more fully about what it means for God to be glorified in your work. Again, shout out to listener Tyson. Thanks for the popcorn. And Mike thanks you especially because his belly is much fuller and more satisfied as a result of this podcast.
Yes, thanks, Tyson.
Are you going to give your rundown of...
Go, after you're done this podcast, go and get some Tango and Cash from Just Popped.
All right.
Hopefully Just Popped gives us a kickback.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, future podcast topics, or other food items that are delicious, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.